Climate Change the Facts. The Science and Politics of Climate Change by Ian Clymer. Part 2. Ocean Alkalinity. In former times of high atmospheric CO2, oceans were not acid. There was no runaway greenhouse, and the rate of change of temperature, sea level, and ice waxing and waning was no different from the present. The alkalinity, measured as pH units on a logarithmic scale, of ocean water changes is slightly variable. A very slight change to ocean pH would involve a chemical reaction utilizing monstrous volumes of acid. Seawater does not become acidified. It changes slightly in alkalinity. The lowest alkalinity, pH 7.3, is very close to acid hot springs. Any green, climate activist, or journalist who refers to ocean acidity demonstrates a lack of knowledge of basic chemistry. Or maybe they are just deliberately misleading. The oceans have been alkaline throughout the history of time because water chemistry, ocean floor sediments, and new volcanic rocks on the seafloor buffer seawater to stop it becoming acid, even during times of CO2 concentrations that were thousands of times the present value. Ocean water, such as borates, buffer seawater and keep its pH constant. At mid-ocean ridges, where volcanic rocks spew out on the ocean floor above large magma chambers, the extensional tectonics allow the ingress of cool, alkaline seawater down fractures to depths of about 5 kilometers into the fresh basalts. Chemical reactions between natural glasses and minerals in basalt causes water and rock to swap chemicals. This is a buffering process that allows the oceans to remain at constant pH. This process has been taking place for thousands of millions of years during warm times, cold times, and times of high atmospheric CO2. Yet, the oceans have never been acid. If they were acid at some time, then there would have been a gap in the marine fossil record, as carbonate shells of organisms would have dissolved. There is no such gap. 4. Climate change will be irreversible, and that human emissions of carbon dioxide must be reduced or stopped as soon as possible. Governments and their agencies claim that science supports their ideology. But while research grants are given to support this ideology, naysayers are denied grants, ignored, or, more commonly, pilloried. This doesn't happen in many other branches of science, where competing theories are supported with research funds, ideas are energetically discussed, and theories are changed based on new validated evidence. Matters of climate change have been politicized. Everyone has an opinion, despite commonly not having the knowledge to underpin an opinion. Scientifically illiterate journalists become champions of a cause, rather than impartial journalists, and various media networks have taken a partisan political position. There has never been a public debate about human-induced climate change, only dogma. Science is full of different interpretations of similar observations, and, while it sometimes leads to heated and protracted arguments, it seldom leads to one side trying to attribute to their opponents all the basest characteristics of the human species. Yet this is precisely what happens in the climate change non-debate. Question even one minor factor in the official story, and you are likely to be accused of all sorts of political chicanery and moral turpitude. I am yet to find a scientist or read a paper which claims that the climate is not changing. Hence, to label someone as a climate change denier demonstrates that the accuser believes that without human activity, climate would not change. This is ignorance. If Australia reduced its CO2 emissions by 5% by 2020, unvalidated models by climate scientists predict that there would be a cooling of between 0.0007 degrees Celsius and 0.00007 degrees Celsius. Such temperature changes are experienced by just moving. This temperature decrease cannot be measured, And such a restriction of emissions is pointless in the light of the great increase in emissions by the developing world. Surely few activists would consider this meaningful. Australia would suffer an alarming fall in its standard of living, and the voluntary act of international environmental kindness would have absolutely no effect on the global climate. Such a self-destructive sacrifice by Australia would not be reciprocated by developing nations, such as China and India. The community sits back with a warm glow feeling that by taxing the, quote, polluter, it has done something for the planet. They certainly have done something for the planet. The economically vulnerable have been pushed into fuel poverty. Vulnerable people die earlier. Costs and unemployment increase. And, in the third world, such climate policies create the continuation of crippling poverty and unnecessary deaths, especially amongst women and children. In the UK over the last 5 years, home heating costs have risen 63%, real wages have decreased, and an increasing number of the poor spend more than 10% of their income on energy. Energy-poor pensioners are spending their days riding in heated buses to keep warm. A third are leaving parts of their homes cold and rugging up with hats and scarves and blankets, and they are forced to stay in bed longer because of the cost of energy. Is this green policy about helping the poor, or the triumph of ideology over tried and proven systems? This warm embrace of feel-good, highly expensive, renewable wind energy has left the most vulnerable citizens out in the cold, literally. In Germany, charities report the power is cut off for more than 300,000 households each year because consumers can't afford to pay the high costs of renewable green electricity. Some 800,000 Germans are now described as being in energy poverty. German consumers now will be forced to pay annually more than 24 billion euros to subsidize electricity from solar, wind, and biofuel generating plants that produced electricity at a market price of just over 3 billion euros. Because of the Green Dream, Germans now have the highest electricity prices in Europe. In the UK, green levies for renewable energy are causing energy poverty for 2.4 million British households. There are some 6,000 wind turbines there, with about 1,000 offshore. In the 2012-2013 winter, there were 35,000 additional deaths. This correlates with the increase in wind turbines and the increasing number of the people facing energy poverty. It translates as 6 elderly, sick, or vulnerable people dying each year for every wind turbine, or 6 deaths per megawatt of wind power generated. In the 2011-2012 winter, tens of thousands of trees disappeared from parks and woodlands across Greece. Impoverished residents did not have money to pay for electricity and turned to fireplaces and wood stoves for cooking and heat. The same has occurred in Germany. The combination of a cold winter and rising energy costs has forced people to go collecting wood in the forest for home heating and cooking. Governments cannot resist a new tax. The community sees carbon taxes as a tax on rich, filthy industrialists and their polluting businesses. There is no such thing as carbon pollution, and the carbon gas emitted from industry is CO2, a colorless, odorless, non-toxic gas. CO2 is plant food. It is good for life on Earth, and human emissions are directly proportional to employment. There's a very low level of the community's scientific knowledge displayed when CO2 is regarded as a pollutant, rather than the key to photosynthesis. 5. In order to stop climate change, energy sources need to be shifted from coal, gas, and oil to wind, solar, tidal, and biomass. The alternative energy systems, such as wind and solar, are environmentally disastrous. They cause loss of ecosystems, destruction of wildlife, sterilization of land, inordinate costs that may not be retrieved during the life of the system, and the emission of huge amounts of CO2 during construction. Furthermore, both wind and solar power are inefficient. They can't provide 24/7 baseload power and need backup by coal-burning, carbon dioxide-emitting, electricity-generating plants. If Australia were to generate 50% of its energy needs from wind, an area the size of Tasmania would have to be clear-felled and covered with wind turbines, because wind energy is low density. One large nuclear or coal-fired power station occupying a few hectares would generate the same amount of energy. Germany shut down 8 nuclear power stations because of green pressure. Although Germany has a huge solar and wind generating industry, the unreliability of these ideological power sources is such that Germany has now increased its CO2 emissions by building new thermal coal-powered stations. German electricity prices are now almost twice those of the U.S., and it is hurting. Ironically, the coal boom in Germany is a result of Greenpeace's political success. Denmark had been a very enthusiastic supporter of wind energy. But in 2004, it decided to build no more wind farms because it was producing the most expensive energy in Europe. Denmark could see the financial writing on the wall. Although the Danes had become dependent upon wind energy, they found that when the wind did not blow, they could not buy wind-generated electricity from North Germany because the weather conditions were the same there. They resorted to buying more reliable hydro and nuclear-generated electricity from Norway or nuclear-generated electricity from France at higher prices. When the wind was strong, the power could not be sold because it was also strong in North Germany. This electricity had to be given away. Denmark now has green taxes that account for more than 50% of an electricity bill. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency has engaged in a campaign essentially to regulate coal-fired electricity generation out of existence in the USA. 29 U.S. states and the District of Columbia now have renewable energy mandates, and many are trying to impose cap-and-trade programs. If indeed humans are changing climate, funds that could be dedicated to helping people prepare for and adapt to climate change and extreme weather events are wasted on futile attempts to stop what might or might not possibly happen in 50 or 100 years. The U.S. alone spends $7 billion each year on warming studies, which in truth is nothing but a huge money laundering operation since no real science is conducted. Vapid alarmist reports are the only product generated. Electricity from the wind is totally unreliable, uneconomic, and degrades the environment. Wind energy neither decreases CO2 emissions nor changes global climate. No wind farm could operate without generous taxpayer subsidies and increased electricity charges to consumers and employers. These subsidies are given irrespective of whether the wind farm produces any consumable energy or not, and are paid even when a wind farm is shut down due to strong winds. Wind farmers have been more successful in harvesting massive subsidies from taxpayers than harvesting the wind. The subsidies in Australia are paid per megawatt generated via a renewable energy certificate. More bureaucratic jobs are needed. Wind farms produce less than 30% of their nameplate capacity, often at times of low electricity demand and low electricity prices. No carbon dioxide-emitting coal-fired thermal power station has been replaced by a wind farm. Reliable, tried-and-proven, low-cost, efficient electricity generation from coal is needed as backup because most of the time, the wind does not blow or blows too strongly. Coal-fired power stations take 24 hours to fire up, and they just can't be turned off and on depending upon whether the wind decides to blow or not. In still cold weather, wind farms consume electricity from coal-fired power stations to stop lubricants freezing. Industrial economies and urban areas need low-cost, efficient electricity to function. Eventually, subsidies will run out, and the countryside that was once beautiful will be left with defunct wind farms as a memorial to arrogant green stupidity. In many places, there is no bond held for decommissioning wind farms and land rehabilitation. Hence, we will be left with memorials for our energy stupidity for generations. Wind farms have the lives of parasites. They cannot produce continuous electricity without coal, gas, nuclear, hydro, or geothermal backup. They freeload by attaching themselves to an existing electricity grid built and paid for by those using conventional energy. Each January to February, the Northern Hemisphere has a cold snap, and wind just does not blow. People die. In southeastern Australia in January 2014, the grid needed 12,000 megawatts at peak when the temperature was more than 40 degrees Celsius for days. The 28 wind farms in southeastern Australia could only provide 128 of the 12,000 megawatts required, and it was coal that provided the electricity for air conditioning. When wind farms were needed to provide much-needed electricity for cooling, they only operated at less than 5% capacity. Furthermore, during the 45 degrees Celsius heat wave on the 14th of January 2014, South Australian electricity wholesale prices spiked at $10,515 per megawatt hour. Many people were without electricity. This dwarfed the wholesale long-term spot price of $70 per megawatt hour. In South Australia, 40% of the electricity is supposed to come from wind power. It doesn't. If the wind were constantly blowing at 11 meters per second at every wind farm in South Australia spread over hundreds of kilometers, then the nameplate capacity of 1,203 megawatts would be generated. This does not happen. The Greens state that the wind is always blowing somewhere over such an extensive area, so power is always being produced. Reality is different, and this does not happen. In reality, only 60% of South Australia's notional generating capacity is available to service demand when wind watts go walkabout over 100 times a year. When there is no wind, open cycle gas turbines at $300 per megawatt hour and 65 megawatts of diesel generators at the defunct Adelaide desalination plant kick in to generate electricity and make a killing at the expense of the consumer. Wind turbines all tend to produce peak power at the same time, when winds are strong. They also all produce nothing when there is no wind. This surging creates huge transmission network problems, and at times the network is over capacity. Because of this, wind power is very sensitive to wind speed and can only operate at low wind speeds, and therefore is the lowest quality power for the grid. At other times, it is under capacity. Conclusion. Climate change catastrophism is the biggest scientific fraud that has ever occurred. Much climate science is political ideology dressed up as science. There are times in history when the popular consensus is demonstrably wrong, and we live in such a time. Cheap energy is fundamental for employment, living in the modern world, and for bringing the third world out of poverty. As a result of noisy minority political pressures, Western democratic governments have increased energy costs and created subsidized energy systems that have created a new source of tax revenue. Politicians have responded to a groundswell of unscientific environmental concerns rather than make hard decisions. The end result is increased unemployment, lack of competitiveness, energy poverty, and increased costs. Unless nature has another surprise for us, 3 short decades of irresponsible climate policy will take at least a generation to reverse, because there are now armies of bureaucrats, politicians, scientists, and businesses living off the climate catastrophe scare. Furthermore, the education system has been captured by activists, and the young are inculcated with environmental, political, and economic ideology. During their education, these same young people are not given the basic critical and analytical methods to evaluate ideology that has been presented as fact. Only a brave government can change the education system to one that prepares people for life. Climate Change: The Facts is published by Stockade Books. All rights reserved.